you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I never had an inkling that he had sexual designs on Jan. Oh, I tell you, I don't know how we could have been so gullible when there were so many red flags. But I didn't see the red flags.
Hey, I'm Paco Romaine, and today on SupDoc, I tackle the hit documentary on Netflix, Abducted in Plain Sight. Oh, man. If truth is stranger than fiction, it doesn't get stranger than Abducted in Plain Sight. On October 17th, 1974, 12-year-old Jan Broberg was kidnapped by her next-door neighbor and parents' best friend, B. First of all, never trust someone that goes by a letter. Abducted in Plain Sight is the true story of the Brobergs, an Idaho family who fell under the spell of a sociopathic neighbor with his eyes set on their 12-year-old daughter. Abducted has everything: desire, deceit, faith, and forgiveness, plus hand jobs, aliens, and the CIA. Their troubling admissions reveal epic, and I mean epic, failures and untold personal dramas that point to the biggest tragedy of them all, that these crimes could have been prevented. My guest today is comedian Haley Beacon. Haley is a Bay Area native and has been a selected performer across the country at Pittsburgh Comedy Festival, Blue Whale, Motor City Comedy Fest, and SF Sketch Fest. If you're into defensive millennial material, cliche sassiness, and pop sociology references, you'll love her. And I gotta say, she is great. But if not you, maybe your Bernie-crat aunt probably will. And now, here's Haley. Hey, SupDoc listeners, I am here with comedian Haley Beacon.
Hey.
There she is on the microphone. Thank you for coming, Haley.
Oh, yeah, of course. I heard you need a female companion.
I do need a female companion.
Some weird call for a mission.
Well, have you ever been to Wyoming?
No.
Ogden, Utah?
No. Other Utah, but not Ogden.
Okay. Have you ever been to Mazatlan, Mexico?
No.
We're going to have a lot of fun then.
Damn, am I even qualified to be here?
I think so. Okay. I just got a Winnebago. The reason you're here today is to talk about one of the most fucked up documentaries I have seen in a long time, Abducted in Plain Sight.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. There is this blooming onion of craziness.
A blooming onion of like aliens and biker gangs and...
Oh my God, the biker gangs.
Is that a spoiler? Should I not have said that up top?
No, please, okay. No. In the intro I'm going to record, I'm going to just mention the spoilers. So just assume everyone's seen this fucking shit show of a documentary.
Perfect.
I have seen a lot of documentaries. Mm-hmm. This one is one of the few where I think I screamed out loud numerous times, you know, when watching for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. A don't go in there documentary.
It is, can be classified as a don't go in there documentary. Uh-huh. Yeah. He's in the fucking closet.
He's in fucking everywhere. They just ask him to like be in every room of their house.
Yeah.
He makes rooms for himself in their house. That actually happens.
I know. Okay. Let's try to, if we can, and no rules, but let's try to chronological this thing.
Right.
Because it's fucking nuts.
Well, it doesn't go in chronological order.
No. It kind of jumps around a
bit. So we need to stay on track.
But for the people, for you listeners out there who have not seen the documentary but are tuning in to this podcast right now, we're talking about Abducted in Plain Sight, which is on Netflix. It's directed by Sky Borgman. Basically what it is, it's a story of lust, denial, greed, kidnapping, brainwashing. It's really apropos that there's sirens in the background right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That helps, I think. Like, set
they
the tone.
Knew I was coming here. I answered your post for a female comedian. They got concerned.
Yes, they did. Yeah. I can no longer live near comedy clubs.
because of that.
That makes sense. Yeah. It's called the Haley Law, actually.
It,
mm-hmm.
it will be. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's my biggest cred.
It is. Oh, Haley, the things you've done for comedians, including restriction zones. But yeah, so after I watched this, I was like, fuck, we got to talk about this on SupDoc. So I put out a little posty-poo and was like, I need to talk to, obviously I didn't want to talk to a guy about this.
No, totally.
Yeah.
I know I made you sound like a creep earlier, but you did the right thing.
No, that's fine. I mean, it happens, but I definitely wanted to talk to a female comedian about this because I think your opinion and voice obviously matters a lot more than dudes who are like, whatever. You know,
it's fucking crazy,
dude. That shit's crazy.
They're fucking dumb.
Last thing I'd want to hear is some guy being like, "Well, actually,
yeah, I'm gonna do well." Actually, yeah, this that'd is be my awesome. Time.
Yeah, it's your time to well actually this. So when did you? How did? Let me ask you this: how did you first hear about this documentary?
It was definitely one of those things that was on my Netflix. You know, they advertised it pretty heavily.
Yeah.
I found out it's not a Netflix original. They made it 2 years or released it 2 years previous. But once Netflix got the rights, it really blew up. Your post was probably one of, you know, lots of Facebook statuses about it. And your post was one that I saw like immediately after watching it. It was so fortuitous.
Oh.
Where I was like, I got some fucking response. I don't know where to put it. Maybe on SupDoc.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was, you know, very buzzworthy. It's continued to be buzzworthy.
Oh, my God, I know.
Also, pretty much all my news is from Facebook.
Oh, good.
Since like November 9th, 2016, I'm not really as engaged as I used to be.
Jesus, right.
So, you know, it's an undeniable thing in front of my face right now.
Yeah.
Probably you felt the same way.
I did.
Yeah.
About abducted?
Yeah.
Or that date. Yeah. Well, I love documentaries and I love true crime documentaries, mm-hmm. which I think sometimes people forget. This is a true crime documentary.
So when I knew it was true crime, I just assumed she died.
Right.
So actually, it's really good I watched it twice because I was like, who's this Jen? Because the other Jen's definitely dead.
Yeah.
She wasn't.
She's in it. And not only is she in it. Wow, can you hear the helicopters?
They're really worried about me.
They are super worried about you, Haley.
It's cool, guys.
What have you done? I am gonna, wow.
It's just a podcast.
I was, when it first started, I was like, well, we'll never see this person. We'll never see Jan.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was put into a small crate or something or some luggage. But to my surprise, there she is. And she's basically narrating, in a way, she's like the main talking head. There's many talking heads that we'll get into, but she's one of the main ones. But this was a book.
Mm-hmm.
Stolen Innocence,
mm-hmm.
That Jan and her mom, whose name is Mary Ann, Jan Broberg, Mary Ann Broberg, wrote a book called Stolen Innocence, which I think completely undersells this story, that title.
Oh, again, aliens and biker gangs.
Yes.
Where's the subtitle?
Yeah. What is the subtitle? What would you think the subtitle would be?
Okay, I feel like I might not have a very popular response to this entire documentary, but I think more than anything, really, this is a tale about the capacity for denial. That's what I would subhead this.
Yeah.
Because it's not really about Jan. This is really about all of the adults involved.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, their innocence wasn't stolen. Like, to me, that's not the point of this story at all.
Right.
So yeah.
Well, doesn't Stolen Innocence sound like an after-school special where, like, April falls in love with Johnny and
they smoke marijuana
and they smoke a little Mary Jane.
Yeah. And jump out a window.
Yeah. And live happily ever after. Like this stolen innocence makes it sound like you didn't want to really kiss the boy, but you did. And then you regret it.
Sounds hot. Honestly,
it kind of does sound a little hot. However, it doesn't really get to the meat of the biscuit of Abducted in Plain Sight, if you will. I like to mix metaphors.
It sure is a meat biscuit. That's the title.
Yeah, that's the parenthetical is meat biscuit. So we first get, it opens up and we first start learning about the Broberg family,
mm-hmm.
who are part of the Latter-day Saints.
They are
Mormons and they're part of the Latter-day Saints, which is an awesome institution. There's no better institution than the LDS.
I donate all my money to them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Did you grow up Christian or anything?
I grew up absolutely nothing, which is weird because I have very Puritan like values and behaviors. Like I definitely have Mormon blood in me somewhere. Like I don't drink or smoke, or I rarely, you know, dated people, was late to that in life. What's other things I don't do? There's a lot I don't do.
Oh, wow. So, so we start hearing about this story from old Jan there, Jan Broberg, and they start talking about B, Robert Burchold, this crazy character. let's talk about Robert for just pretty much an hour. Let's talk about Burchold, B. What was your first impression? What was your first thoughts when you started hearing, as this story starts to unravel?
I mean, everyone describes him as extremely charismatic and attractive. And like, I think it's meaningful to point out he's very ugly. He's fucking freaky looking. Yeah. Like he looks like.
But
like,
is he 70s ugly? I think he's 70s pretty.
He has good 70s hair.
Yeah, he's got great 70s
hair. But the rest of his body is like hot dogs. Like,
right.
He looks like, like if Chucky had like a stepdad.
Oh, right.
His proportions are very like marionette.
Yeah.
Like.
That is true.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like they must not have captured. Maybe it's just me. Maybe you're into him or someone else. But it was very hard for me to reconcile the description that was provided of him versus the like visuals and even the video or the like voice recordings. Like, yeah. I did not feel any affinity towards him at all, even before you knew what the fuck he was up to.
Yeah. Oh my God. Those recordings.
Where are those? Did I miss? Are those dramatizations? Did he actually record those?
Yeah.
Like, for who? For himself?
He must have been. He's so fucking creepy, dude. He probably masturbated in the bathroom while listening to himself talk about Dolly.
We've all done it.
Oh yeah, sure.
But yeah,
it's your, it's our only vice. Yeah, don't make fun of my hobbies.
Accept that.
But so he meets, because he's part of the church. So Robert Burchold, which everyone called B, which is super cool, was part of the church and got to know the Brobergs through church. Now they start having B over for lunch or something, because this dude is fucking awesome. Well, he owned a business.
Okay, so truly the way the father said they related was, he had a family, I had a family, he did business, I did business.
Yeah,
that's all they needed.
That's all. And a fruit basket, apparently.
He pretty sharp guy.
Pretty sharp guy.
Fruit basket. Yeah,
for sending a fruit basket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing, I didn't know it was that easy.
It's pretty much that easy. Well, and it's the 70s. Again, it's. And then I love the picture of the fruit basket they show, because it has like a banana, like a couple apples. Like, ooh,
for sure.
That's a good fruit basket.
It doesn't age well in the era of edible arrangements.
Yeah, exactly. And he's basically sent them a thank you letter for like hanging out or something.
He said, "We sure do enjoy your family."
Yeah.
He's admitting it. He just confessed. Wow.
That's true. That's a good point. That's like state evidence A.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And then him and his mousy wife. So they said.
Gail.
They did. I guess he didn't have kids.
No, they had kids.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Because I remember Jan saying there is a best friend for everyone in the family.
Oh, right.
So they must have had three daughters who, unsurprisingly, and I don't blame them, are not a part of this documentary in any way, shape, or form.
Any of the Burchold kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is so odd because, but I guess fucking predators try to live normal lives because that's how they become in with people.
Oh, and church is such a good place for that.
Oh my God, right?
Like, not only do you have access to so many people, and there's like a hierarchy to climb with like a really easy plan, like show up every Sunday and then some, like, you know, host these field trips. And what I like I said, I've never been in organized religion, but the fact that there's an organization to be a part of is like, that's where all the fucking serial killers and serial whatevers go.
Right. Yeah.
And it's this, all this veneer of like morality and purity, or at least chasing after it. It's just the perfect breeding ground for literally this.
If you were going to do what this guy did, woo, that's a tough sentence. You would put yourself in where a place where everyone's fucking like super naive and impressionable, which is church basically, and where there's kids. You know,
and where you all have this sense, I mean, whatever, someone write in the comments if I'm wrong, but it's like in most religions, but I think in Mormonism especially, there is this sense of elitism, right? Of like, well, we're the special ones, like we're some type of we're on some type of level with God, like some level of enlightenment where like this shit would never happen to us. And it's like a club.
Yeah.
You trust your club members.
I got the call in my FBI office in Pocatello, Idaho. I had been an agent for 6-7 years when this kidnapping took place. My partner and I left the office right away, went over to the Broberg's house, and we talked to them for several hours. Robert Berchtold was a close friend of theirs, a neighbor. He was a Pocatello businessman, a member of their LDS faith, and a pillar in the community. He had lots of friends. They didn't suspect any type of foul play, even though it was 5 days.
I don't think he's kidnapped her. He's just gone someplace with her. And he had to drill that into our minds. He kidnapped her. She's your daughter. She's gone.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So they play a tape. Like Haley mentioned, there's these audio tapes, these cassette tapes that you get to hear B's voice in. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning, he starts to describe Jan, who he calls Dolly. Mm-hmm. Which is super creepy in itself.
Like, what's a littler girl thing than an actual little girl?
Right.
Is a Dolly.
Oh my God, that's true. Yeah.
I'm a writer, so you know.
You can do that. You pick up on so much. It's just amazing.
Like, really read people.
Yeah. You get it. You get at that. Yeah, to call a little girl. I mean, there are so many warning signs. There's so many flags mm-hmm. here that these parents, probably, worst parents ever.
I've seen a meme or two that says so.
Yeah. Maybe Mr. and Mrs. Hitler might be the worst.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Frederick und Vivian Hitler. Not good parents. But these guys, man, the Brobergs, nobody can understand. I don't have kids. Do you have? You don't have kids.
None that I know of. Right, yeah. Classic.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like, good job.
This is where I feel like I don't know. I have a different response than I've heard anyone else have. I think they're great. I'm just kidding. But
that's good.
You're about to just end this right here.
And goodbye.
No, what I actually think, I mean, and you did share an article with me about this that talked about denial, but even that article, I feel like could have done a lot more to explain like what the fuck actually happened. They didn't do nothing. You know what I mean? These weren't like passive or uninformed figures in her life. Like they were actually continuing to make choices to engage with this person.
Right.
And I don't know. I haven't heard anyone really explore like putting yourselves in their shoes. In their mind, they think they're doing something right. Every single person is motivated by some narrative that they're living by. Every single person thinks what they're doing is justifiable. They are the hero of their own story. So like, to me, these parents are, I really think, I mean, what does it mean to say they're doing their best? I really think they did their best.
Their best just sucks.
Their best sucks.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, I mean, we didn't explore either of their life stories or their right. childhoods, but to me, they strike me as people who are extremely sheltered. Whether it's because of the church or like the church and whatever else life experiences they had. And therefore, like, when something bad happens, they don't have coping skills. Mm-hmm. They don't have any capacity. They're weak. I have this like feeling that they're just really weak people.
Yeah.
And does weak mean you're bad? Does weak mean you're like an asshole, I don't know. That doesn't mean you can't have really negative impacts on
right.
your children, for example.
I think weak means that you at one point allow a predator, not knowing they're a predator and they're a master manipulator, into your house.
Yeah.
I think bad means that you let them sleep next to your daughter and let them take your daughter on at horseback riding and stuff.
And that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like we look at that and they, I will not, I don't shy away from calling them crazy. But I think what's going on, I mean, what you just see over and over and over again is like people do this thing, and it happens a lot in like abuse situations where they, it's almost like this, like, okay, well, I don't want to believe this bad thing. This one bad thing happened. It probably maybe didn't. Sure, I'll let her hang out with him again. And like, if this was really true, I would never do that. If this really happened, I would never let them hang out again. And it's like this self-evident circular reasoning. And honestly, my take on that family is like, I don't think it's that rare.
Okay.
I really don't think that this shit is that rare.
Okay. That's really interesting.
They are folks who've decided to make a documentary about it. And that's also what's so interesting is that they had such a heavy hand. The entire family was completely on board, like with the director directing this documentary. And so it's kind of surprising to me some of the like editing choices that were made in it, because I almost feel like they were set up to get such severe backlash. You know, most of their interviews are really fact-based and kind of frozen in that time. And again, I don't know if these interviews exist. I don't know if these people, like the parents, ever spoke to like any analysis upon reflection, but none of that's in the documentary.
Oh, it's
like
really interesting.
So many different times they cut, especially with the mother, when she talks about her affair, they cut on her saying like, this was an excitement for me, with a smile on her face, and leave it at that.
Yeah.
Like, how are you not going to hate that person when that's all they have to say?
Right.
You know, with Jan, obviously. Oh, there she is.
There she is. TV. She's on the TV.
With Jan, like you see the work she's done to heal from this, because she's able to say, God. Well, this is what happened. You know, when you're in a situation where you're afraid and you feel shame, pretty much you will do anything someone tells you to. That seems like an answer. So Jan gets all this. I mean, she has empathy by virtue of her position in the story, but like she's easy to empathize with because she has any type of self-awareness or self-analysis that for some reason they never show the parents say anything like that.
Right.
I think it's really weird.
That is very interesting. I wonder if that was a conscious choice to be like, we don't really need to psychoanalyze the parents for this doc. We need to get to the story and to focus on Jan,
maybe,
perhaps.
Yeah.
But I was reading an interview with the director where she was lamenting not putting in some other stuff in this, I think, because they had some time constraints. But that is that's a really good point. And so at the beginning, you start to see how Robert or B starts to, I guess, infiltrate the family and how he has these conscientious decisions to start to split up the parents and to start to sequester Jan or Dolly from everyone else, which is so fucking fascinating.
It's such a long game.
I just think it's incredible that someone can go has this long plan or this con in order to separate a child from its parents and then manipulate the parents into doing so. Like, that to me is insanity.
It's not only right. So he definitely only hooked up with both parents.
Bum, bum,
which
bum.
Like, what a baller.
Yeah.
But that was purely like, I don't think that fed into any impulse he had except to have blackmail on deck.
Right.
100%. And he also, the fact that he instilled in the other sisters that they'd all want their own rooms.
Right.
And physically built a wall for him to have her all to himself.
This is crazy.
And the other, I mean, the other thing too that I really want answers to is like, when did he record the alien shit?
Yeah.
That to me was like the most like long con out of, I'm like, you are truly not only like a bad person, but a really creative con artist.
Super creative.
He kicked out the window from inside the car to look like a kidnapping. Like, he was thinking about the FBI.
Right.
He's thinking about literally like forensic science.
Right.
He also is thinking about you know, how to separate, how to make Jan want to separate herself from her family.
Right.
And I guess, like, I didn't know this, but the best way to do that to a 12-year-old is aliens.
Aliens.
And, like, the and intercom walls. And the, like, voice. Like, what's the voice? I'm picturing him with, like a voice modulator.
Right.
Editing this.
And not just his recording. Robot voice. This is Zeta yeah. and Zathra.
We have an important mission for you.
The mission was that I was to have a child, the child that would save the alien planet, by the time I turned 16. And there you will meet the male companion. And there on the little couch of the motorhome was B. You know, it was like this huge relief. And so he comes to, and he starts to tell me what had happened. I completely knew that he was the male companion, that together we're supposed to have a child. The whole thing of him being, you know, this 40-year-old man and me being a 12-year-old girl was definitely strange. The whole thing was strange, but I also now felt like, well, I'm an alien. I'm strange. I'm not normal. When you combine being isolated and completely afraid, you can pretty much get someone to do or believe anything.
At one point, he talks to the family and is like, I can build a wall down where the girls sleep because they shared a bedroom. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm a handyman. Mm-hmm. I can build a wall and like she can be by herself. And the parents are like, cool.
Thank you so much.
That's super cool of you. And then he was like, yo, mom, you're looking pretty good.
I like your legs.
Mm-hmm. I like your body. All the things that like a good Mormon woman wants to hear from a strange man mm-hmm. who has a family and a wife and kids. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the points that the director had made in a article I read was she was saying that the Brobergs, Bob and Marianne, love them, had already at this point been married for 12 or 13 years.
Yeah.
So the romance had kind of sizzled. Rare. Yeah. Well, and then, you know, it's like, good old Bob, man. I don't know if he's so into the ladies. What do you think about that? So what we have, I guess what we're jumping around at this point is the fact that B makes moves on Marianne, Mom Broberg, and Papa Broberg.
Can I point out,
please,
the way that he made a move on the mom was by asking her to bring him a sandwich.
Oh my God, that's right. That's so,
Like there's a lot of excuses people make for this movie. We're like, it was a different time. Yeah. And like, of course I don't care and it doesn't matter.
Just getting in my way.
But in terms of like, what's something that would be socially acceptable?
Yeah.
Not calling someone else's wife and having them bring you a fucking sandwich yeah. at work.
Well, that's how you get into good Christian women's hearts.
Now I know.
Yeah. It's either a goulash or something made in a crock pot or mm-hmm. a sandwich. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, well, just started with some sandwiches. You know?
Literally.
They all start with sandwiches. I grew up in a crazy religious family.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Very
what kind.
It was free denominational.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's agape. You know, it's like, it's these for wayward souls that were born again and they speak in tongues and they lay hands. Like, I never went to the doctor. That's Baptist. That's like more sudden. That's fine. No, this was more like laying hands. This is more like the hippies of the 60s grew up and found themselves a little wayward. Mm. And they were like, now what do we do? Let's find God. And then it was just like, it's a lot of, I never went to the doctor. Like, my parents just prayed,
ooh,
you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So
are you good?
No, I have a lot of problems. Yeah, I hate doctors.
Sick. That explains your limp.
Yeah, I have a lot of limps. I have like four limps. It's really weird.
Like they cancel each other out.
Yeah. No, I just walk in a circle.
Took you forever to get here. It did. I'm just kidding. We're in your house. Here.
But yeah, if you want to, it's like obviously you start by being nice and you being congenial and you being flirty and you're charming. But like the sense of how you break down a family with just that, like, is it a 70s thing? It can't just be a 70s thing.
Well, I'm wondering too, it's like you would be able to speak to this more. Like, what sketchy shit happened in your church? There must have been some like cycles of abuse or manipulation.
Is that because I'm crying right now?
Oh, he's been crying since I'm gone here.
It's really embarrassing. Well, in the church, like my parents had to go to a couple different churches because there was like one pastor. We went to this place called the People's Church, which is because that's, you know, the San Francisco People's
Church. For yoga?
Yeah, it was for hot yoga. It's super cool. We did a lot of Bikram back in the day. But there was a one of our pastors had an affair and we had to leave. Yeah.
So my point, like, I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a part of living in, like, especially in the U.S., like, a puritanical society is, like sex already, the psychological part of sex is a lot of, like, shock. Like, that I just can't believe this is happening. And a part of what makes sex exciting to people in a society that, like, tells you you shouldn't be doing it, wanting it, thinking about it, is especially to have it, like, with a extra forbidden person or in an extra forbidden place. And like, that's what church is. Like, I know it's
it's really smart.
Pete
right?
Holmes or someone has talked about that a little bit. Cause he kind of like left Christianity.
He left the flock
pretty much. And
he got the flock out of there.
Flocko Romaine. Anyway,
that's me.
He said something along the lines of like, what's hotter than like, pastor sex.
Right.
And people, especially when you're in like such a close relationship, a pastor is basically like a therapist for religious people.
Yeah.
Which you see a little bit of in this doc. But it's like, it's just fucking ground. It's just what people do. People are looking for a thrill. And it's almost like the more pure you are on the outside, the more rot for seeking that thrill you are.
Right.
I definitely think that's a part of what happened, at least with the mom. To address the dad,
Bob,
I have 1,000 more questions about
let's talk.
That hand job. P.S.
The handy.
An act of masturbation is not something you can do for another father.
That was so giving.
That felt like such a distancing way to describe what happened.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not here to bully him about it, but like,
right.
I don't understand how one request was all he needed to be convinced to jack off this friend.
Well, I think it's because it had happened before and probably after. You know what I'm saying? Like,
probably.
Yeah. I mean, he talks about it. They don't go into depth about it in the documentary, but he does mention apparently after like 10 hours of interviewing him, like the director did not want to broach the subject. Mm-hmm. It came up in like one of the court documents,
right?
That they had a relationship, but like the dad never talked about it to his family, never talked to it with the girls, just
before
never
the
mentioned
film.
It. But then he kind of opened up in one of the interviews of all places. But like, it seems to me, it seems to me Bob really dug B, you know, and wanted probably the same kind of forbidden thing you're talking about. I mean, what's hotter for like a Mormon dude than another Mormon dude? Two Mormon daddies.
That's definitely a search term.
Oh, yeah.
On the internet that I don't watch. That's my other Mormon thing. I've never seen porn.
Oh, wow.
But I get how to make jokes about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, you just think. I mean, you can just riff, I guess. But yeah, in the doc, Bob starts tearing up and crying, and he starts to retell the story of when B said to him, like, my girl, my wife and I don't have sex anymore, and they went on a drive.
Mm-hmm.
But this B character can get anybody in a fucking car, apparently. That's like one of his special skills. Mm-hmm. He gets people into motor vehicles.
He should have just taken his license away.
I know. You know what would have solved all this? Taking his license away. Those fucking cops never think of that.
Just get him a bicycle.
Yeah, if he could just get him. So like, they're in a car and he looks over at dear old Bob. He looks in his eyes and he's like, you know what I need? A handy.
He said, I need some relief.
I need some relief. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just kids stuff.
Right.
Which I'm like, that to me is not a sell.
No.
But apparently it worked for Bob.
You know, kids, you know, just jacking each other off. Yeah.
Literally opposite.
Yes, exactly.
Opposite of kids stuff.
Mostly but you know, there's Bob's a florist, you know, he owned a floral shop.
That's right.
I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it's just so I mean, it's like at every juncture of this documentary, you find yourself screaming out loud, no, don't do that. What are you fucking thinking? Stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know what's behind the I don't know how a dad, knowing that at this point that this dude likes his daughter the way he does, like would want, like who would do that? I don't understand. They live in Idaho. Maybe that's something.
Is it Idaho?
I think they live in Idaho. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like most of this happens in Idaho, Wyoming, Utah, mm-hmm. you know. But so then what we find out in this documentary is that they let B sleep next to Jan for quite a long time.
Something like 2 years.
For like 2 fucking years.
Or at least 6 months. You know, not
that's
a couple
same
times.
Same fucking thing. Yeah.
It was routine.
Yeah. Like nightly four. No, wait. I think I wrote it down. 4 times a night. For, let's see.
Or 4 times a week for...
6 months.
Okay, it was 6 months.
4 times a week for 6 fucking months. And he's already constructed a wall to separate her from her sisters and stuff. And then we find out that she goes with him. Basically, she wakes up. She's groggy. She has no idea what the fuck's going on. They're supposed to go horseback riding. Mm-hmm. And she wakes up to the sounds of... aliens.
Sure does.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck is that? Who comes up with that kind of shit?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you have to give him props. He's probably the most creative, like, abductor, molester, at right. least that I've ever heard of.
He's pretty creative. Yeah.
What if all this is just because he, like, wasn't a successful playwright? That like could, Hitler style yeah. with his dog paintings.
Right, right, right.
Really, this was about the alien characters for him.
But this is also in the, like 1974 where it's like, you know, Bundy's out there killing people. It's not like innocent. It's not 1954. This is like 1974. And they just let this dude just take off with their daughter because they're like, oh, what harm could come of it? You know, like, and then she wakes. And so there's this also this thing about the Mormons that, this is one of the things I also feel like they didn't dig into very well because it's not a big part of this doc, but the alien things in Mormons, like don't Mormons believe in multiple planes and multiple universes?
Yeah.
They're a whole alien people. They're a whole alien religion, right?
Yeah. And they're going to go like end up out there again after death.
Yeah.
So it's actually, I'm glad you brought that up because I remember you're really good at your job, Paco.
Thank you.
No, watching it the second time, I did like pick up on something I hadn't before, which is when Jan is talking about how she was manipulated, she said two things, which is, or I'm sorry, these are two different things she said at different times. When she was in the, you know, the interview, she said something about like, I'm a strong believer in life after death. And the second time I watched it, I remembered that aspect of the Mormon belief system. So I didn't know if she meant that. She meant literally aliens are like on the table as a thing. I just thought they came early or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when she runs away, not to skip ahead, but the second time in right. that letter.
Yeah.
And she says like, I'm done with your religion.
Right.
Or whatever else.
Yeah.
And I wonder too if that was like, no, I know the real aliens. Your Mormon aliens.
Ain't nothing.
They fake as shit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, your fake Mormon aliens ain't got nothing on Zeta and Zethra. Which is, I think that's part of the manipulation. If you wanted to manipulate a good little Christian girl, how better way to do it than to be like, okay, listen, God spoke to me. I have him on tape here if you want to hear him. But he's saying like, you know, oh, this is embarrassing, but you should fuck me because it's the only way we're going to like save the universe.
And if you don't do it,
oh, right.
We'll kill your sister or she'll go blind or something.
Yeah, the blind part. And yep. Your dad will die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll be vaporized.
Right.
Quote. That's a quote.
Yeah. Your ass will get vaporized.
Yeah.
You think, I wonder if he was like watching like Star Trek or something when he was writing some of this
probably.
Shit.
Probably. But so he's writing spec scripts.
This is just that's what he was.
Where he ended up using it.
Yeah. He's a failed spec script writer. Uh-huh. Aren't we all?
I was going to say that.
Right? So let's bring, so now we also get introduced to good old Pete Walsh, the FBI agent.
Mm-hmm.
This guy just, he ain't got no love for the Brobergs, man. This man. Right?
Understandably.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
He's just like, what the fuck is wrong with this family?
It's interesting because I think one of the things he shared put everything, again, when everyone wants to blame the 70s or use the 70s as an excuse, one thing he said was, you know, pedophile is not a concept in my mind. Like, I'm sure I'd read it in a dictionary somewhere.
Stranger danger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, he couldn't get his mind to go there even.
Yeah.
But one thing he was able to get his mind to go to was kidnapping. And he had to convince the parents that this was a kidnapping, just objectively.
Yeah.
Because they did die, which didn't happen.
Right.
Yeah, he was saying, like, if they're alive, this is a kidnapping. But even he couldn't push himself to understand the motivation. Like, automatically, it's a, like, offhand joke these days in 2019 that, like, someone's a pedophile.
Right.
And I think the fact that, the fact that even he didn't really get what was going on.
Like, an FBI agent.
His version of a kidnapper is probably like the Hamburglar. Like, he still doesn't really get why it's happening. He can handle the logistics, at least.
At least the Hamburglar has the dollar sign on the bag. Like, there's no kid. You know, painting.
Yeah. We're all after that cheddar.
They can't figure that out. So B ends up going on a horseback riding thing with Jan, and they end up in Mazatlan, Mexico.
For like weeks.
And he still has to convince the parents that this is a kidnapping. Meanwhile, now Jan is waking up to the sounds of aliens.
In leather constraints.
Oh, that's right.
And again, like, when did he buy these?
I don't know. Well, when as we find out them? At the end of the doc, this was not an isolated incident. What's really fucking disgusting is how little fucking time he actually spent in jail for any of this fucking stuff. That's insane to me. Mm-hmm. She mentions he raped a toddler and spent a year in fucking jail.
There's always more.
I know.
That's the other thing about stories like this.
Yeah,
like,
it's never just a one fucking time. I mean, these people like him had developed this kind of shit for years, you know, I'd imagine. But yeah, so they're in Mexico, and this is when things get really fucking nuts, because he's like, I want to marry you, 12-year-old Jan, and you want to marry me because we're in love.
And the mission.
Oh, right, and we have to save the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a fucking twisted ass Netflix original special, you know, like B and Dolly save the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
via fucking.
Oh my God. Well, and they kind of didn't like she said, like he just put it in a little bit, like he was smart enough
not to break her hymen,
not to break the hymen.
Yeah.
In hymen. Yeah. That's
you could call it a hymie.
I know.
As a woman, I give you permission in that moment to have said hymie.
Oh man, but I mean that in itself is a example of just how much he thought about this stuff.
Very,
you know?
Calculated.
Very calculated. And she so she wakes up. The reenactment is insane.
Can I just say,
yes,
the wigs.
Yeah,
the fucking wigs. Gail star wig. You didn't ask me yet about the best wig in the documentary. I know you're going to.
Yeah.
It's 100% Gail's mop top.
Was it Gail's? Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not in it enough.
Yeah. I really want to know more about her story.
Gail looks just beaten down.
For real. Yeah. Oh my God. Imagine the capacity of denial she needs to maintain in order to live her life.
What is up with denial? Why is that such a strong defense mechanism? Why is it so that, how can it be that strong?
This is like, just to be candid, this is a thing I think about a lot. You know, that's why I definitely responded to this documentary and like wanted to talk about it, is I just have this kind of this theory that everyone has a lot more they're in denial about than they're willing to admit. And we'll maybe like never understand. I mean, it just is like a fun example. You have to have a lot of denial to even want to do comedy or have like any creative career. Like, we are using denial every day on like a really basic and sometimes functional and healthy level. But like, again, especially when it comes to abuse situations, I mean, the stat said is like 1 in 3 women are abused. And I just have a feeling it's a lot more than that.
1 in 3 that they know of.
Exactly.
That have reported.
Oh my God. Like, I'm sure they're counting even for like what's probably not reported. Like, I would go with literally more than 50%. That's just a feeling that I have. And I think in these situations, I mean, these aren't like men who come out of the woods and then like do an abuse thing and then disappear. Like, in this story, as well as like so many others, abusers are coworkers. People are married to abusers.
Right.
You can marry and have children with a child molester and never know it, because people do it all the time. And like, not to be real spooky, but like literally everyone I know, everyone you know has someone in their life like this that they're not aware of. That's just a fact. And again, that's why I take this story as like just a warning to check yourself. Like probably people wouldn't let it get as far as the parents did in this situation. But I think the lesson can be, you know, transferred to other situations. Like I think people function on denial a lot more than we talk about. It's hard to talk about something that you're not letting yourself think about. Like that's the nature of the problem.
Right.
But yeah, I just think it's this kind of like when you have this idea of who you are, mm-hmm. and something makes you feel ashamed, like what is shame? Shame is something that's challenging who you think you are, right? And when your entire identity is based around like certain things that you value and that you expect from yourself and the people around you, that's not a small thing to compensate for.
No, not at all. Especially if your moral compass is God and Christianity and puritanical, you know, purity stuff.
And also with this, like with this type of crime, with sexual abuse, especially, like an instrument of the crime is always separation, isolation, and privacy. And so it's very easy to live in plausible deniability when no one else was there.
Huh. That's super true. I wonder, like, I mean, back then there were no like Yahoo chat groups to like, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? You couldn't Google like, how do I separate a 12-year-old from her family? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you know that? Like, how does someone understand the intricacies of that kind of stuff?
It's like, it is impressive. It's truly impressive the way, like, okay, the wall, that was sick. Like knowing that if he like fucked both the parents, then he could blackmail them into signing an affidavit. Like knowing that shame, like in the Mormon world was so great.
Right.
It would drive them to literally pick themselves over their child. But the most impressive thing to me is like how he knew to get Jan to separate herself, to bring herself to him, like even years later in the second instance of her disappearance.
Second, for those people who have not seen this doc yet, and I know at this point you've probably paused and gone and watched it because this is insane. Second kidnapping, not one, but fucking two. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't even count the times he just slept next to her in the parents' house, which they were fucking cool with.
On a Wednesday night.
And just a fucking Wednesday night, man. I mean, I went to a lot of churches and like that's, I could kind of see some of this fucking happening, to be honest. But like, so they're in Mexico. They get a marriage license. Mm-hmm. They call the dad and they're like, we need your permission. I need your permission to totally like fucking wed your girl.
Rule correction real quick. They didn't call the dad. They called my favorite interviewer of the entire documentary, which is Bertolt's brother.
Oh my God, you're right.
He's
oh my God.
Incredible.
Joe.
Like, well, I don't know. He always did like his little girls. This is not an exaggeration. That is his real voice.
Yeah.
I've been practicing.
He is the most nonchalant, like sexist, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is his bag? He is so nonchalant about this shit.
But he's also the most in touch in a way. Like,
he's most honest.
Are you going to pick nonchalant over denial? I pick nonchalant.
Yes.
He's like, no, my brother was always a sexual pervert.
He
like,
always
that's the first thing
yeah,
he said.
Yeah, he always liked little girls.
He messed with my sister. I told him to stop.
Yeah, he's like, it doesn't surprise me one bit. But he's also a bit, he defends his brother some in this, you know.
Does he?
Well, a little bit in that he was like, nobody could sell like my brother, you know, like selling cars and shit.
Right, no perspective on like what's important here. That's
right.
True. He said he sold cars out the yin yang.
Yeah, the yin yang. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is awesome.
The first time that I remember actually seeing him after the kidnapping, it was in the night. The first thing that woke me up was the little box. Birchtold appeared in my bedroom. He came in and he would talk about the mission and that the mission was going to continue and that they were making plans and preparations for us to be together and just to keep doing what I was doing and to keep following the rules. And I continued to be in communication with Birchtold and I would do whatever I was told to do.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
They try for a second to make you feel bad about B, because they're like, he tells the story in one of the tapes. He's like, I grew up with a stepfather in Wyoming in the backwoods and nothing, and lived in a bunkhouse.
And my aunt fucked me.
And my aunt.
Do you think that's true?
I have no reason to doubt it.
I think it's probably true.
Yeah, me too.
Slash maybe even more happened to him.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting too, how it's like, I don't know what is Mormons' relationships to doctors? Do they do doctors?
I don't think so. They don't celebrate birthdays.
Doesn't seem like it. Yeah. Because yeah, the fact that they would believe a doctor would actually tell him as a part of your therapy from getting dumb fucked by your aunt.
Right.
You have to keep the cycle going.
Dude.
And yeah, I just wondered again, it's like the relief of getting to refer to, or I should say defer to, an authority, like both the doctor in Berchtold's case, as well as the doctor that said there's no sign of sexual trauma, that basically gives the parents just free reign to be like, oh, well, we checked.
We're done.
We fucking did our due diligence despite every other thing that
box checked.
Tells us what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's a fancy therapist from California. He said, go ahead and sleep with our daughter. So we're like, God damn it. Why not?
They don't sound like that.
No, they don't. That's just.
But that's how they act.
Yeah, that's how they act. That's my act out for this. And dude, it's so fucking nuts. Like, and then they sign the affidavit, which basically says like, oh, we let him do it. We knew he was going to take her. It was willing, you know.
And truly the only threat. So he was going to go to prison. He was indicted.
Right.
He was going to face charges. And the only thing that they needed to hear in order to sign an affidavit saying that they knew, you know, they gave a consent for him to take their daughter to Mazatlan, was just the threat of an affair.
Right.
So it must be, I mean, I just have to take that as evidence that that must be the most unholy thing that people are actually prepared to respond to and respond negatively to. Because it was worth it to them. It was worth it to save the appearance of their marriage to not punish the person that definitely hurt their daughter.
Yeah, right. That's a really good point. And that's like saving face.
Above all else.
Above all else.
Because even when she disappears again, they say, oh, we just let everyone know like she was at her grandma's. We just really didn't want the press to find out.
We didn't want it to, and we didn't want to worry people or whatever the mom says. And then cut to fucking Walsh FBI guy just being like, 2 weeks. They waited 2 weeks to notify the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
That's insanity.
And I think it really is like Yeah, denial is not one thing. It's not one decision. It's like this continued check. Like your brain, there's no way your brain doesn't bump up on like, but what is going on? But what if this is shitty again?
Right.
And you just find a way to like tell yourself again and again and again not to worry. And I think, yeah, that second time it was just like, well, there's no way this would happen again. Almost like releasing themselves with any like power of the situation. Like, there's just no way this would happen again. It was crazy enough the first time. Right. It's definitely not good. Like, lightning doesn't strike twice.
Yeah.
Unless you
allow it to.
Unless you make lightning.
And or you build another tower taller than the first one in a lightning storm.
Which they pretty much
did. Which they did.
And that's what they did.
Blind faith, giving up all choices and hope to a higher power is basically what Christianity is. So all they're doing being good Christians, you know, and letting their daughter get molested and assaulted by a madman. And that's what happens again. Mm-hmm. So she finally comes home from Mexico. He doesn't get any jail time. Oh, no. Or does he serve like 5 days?
He served a very, very small amount of time.
Yeah.
It doesn't even count.
Yeah. And they had like good behavior. Like he got off in some good behavior.
Yeah, because there's no fucking little girls in prison to be bad about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a perfect prisoner because there's no one to chase. He's in there like building walls in between different prisoners.
Doing Habitat for Humanity.
He's awesome. He's teaching people Bible studies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy. Get him back out there. And then as the story unfolds, like mom is what we have not yet talked about is Marianne's role in this.
Yeah.
Marianne is out there fucking B.
They have an 8-month relationship.
8 months.
That included intercourse.
After he'd already raped her little girl.
And didn't it start again because she's trying to reach out to him and is just like, why did you want to marry my daughter? Like, just wondering. And he was like, meet me in person. I'll tell you everything. And then they just fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
It's truly, this is what I'm saying. People are desperate and people are like weak and just like.
So weak.
Confused. They're like so easily confused.
But have a heart. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's your goddamn daughter. Like, the libido is not that strong of an urge. You know what I'm saying? Like, it shouldn't be, is what I guess maybe is what I should say. That's crazy. And it's all because of like some fucking compliments. Like, girlfriend, please, you know? That's insane to me. I mean, I have buyer's remorse when I buy a t-shirt, you know, I can't imagine like just being like, you know what? Let's just fuck. You fucked my daughter, you know, but you said my legs are nice. So let's just do this thing. And then, so she goes through her thing and she finally, realizes that fucking this guy is not a good idea after 8 months.
Only because right. The lawyer
exactly.
was like, excuse me, he's a cancer in your life.
Yeah, you have to cut it out.
I guess you should break up with him. Yeah. And again, she just like kind of rolls over. She just rolls with it.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, I guess that sounds
okay,
right.
Okay, yeah.
And then they get back together.
It's the first time a lawyer has said something good in a documentary in years. Like, good advice is something you don't hear from lawyers in documentaries. So, yeah, so she's like, yeah, I should be with my family and my husband. And then fucking strike two happens where Jan writes the letter we talked about before. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm not in with your morals, your religion. You guys don't let me watch my shows. Like, she's being a little girl. Like, it's so kind of funny, too.
Yeah.
You know how, like, preteens talk like they're adults.
You don't
like,
get me.
You don't get, like, I was just text my niece just turned 17. I love her to death, but she's just like, my parents won't let me party. And I'm like, yeah, you're 17. Like, your parents love you. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, they suck. Other parents are cool. Like, classic. Like, by the book.
And in this case, too, it's like, Birch told was this other adult who was like, no, come live on my family fun center or whatever the fuck.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, she describes him as feeling like yet another parental figure in her life.
Right.
And so to her, it's like, I'm sure she's feeling that angst. She's also deeply traumatized and not addressing it yet. But then it's like she has another adult as an authority justifying what she wants to do.
Oh, yeah.
It's like she has another parent to listen to.
Right.
So she does probably, again, what are people actually motivated by? Why do people think what they do is reasonable? Like, she's just picking a good parent to go with
Jesus,
in her mind.
That's really good. You're right. But it goes beyond dad issues and parental, filling a parental void into like lust and romance, though.
Yeah. And also the fear of the aliens.
And then the fear of
the
aliens.
There's just so much.
There's so much in this blooming
onion.
Because our man here, B, moves to Wyoming and opens up a family fun center of all fucking things.
Mm-hmm.
Like they do a, don't they do a check on people?
Apparently not.
Like if you rent a place, they run checks. But if you buy a family fun center, if you buy something, there's no check of your background, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, yeah, go ahead.
You do business. I do business.
Ah! You have fruit baskets in your lobby at your family fun center. So she hightails it. Well, and then we also forgot to, I mean, there's also a point where he takes her to Seattle mm-hmm. as well. There's that whole trip where
Mom
puts her on the plane.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The don't do it, don't go in there moment.
Yeah. And there's that heartbreaking moment where the dad's just like, I told Marianne, you'll regret this. I'm like, you know what, Bob? Maybe fucking have a fucking spine and tell your wife she can't fucking do something.
They have no spines.
Spineless.
Mm-hmm.
That is what that fucking word means mm-hmm. in this kind of situation. Horribly spineless. It makes me so mad, man. It just like, I've now watched this documentary 4 fucking times. This is the first time, I've got to say, this is the first time I watched it where I had almost no sympathy for anybody in
yeah.
this fucking documentary. Like yeah. I've kind of gotten hardened now to
even
this story.
Jan or anyone else?
And a little, I mean, no, of course, not Jan so much. It's just like, I went from like, it was like the seven stages of like getting through shit. I'm just like, it was the first stage is what the fuck? The second stage is like, this is crazy. The third stage is like, everyone needs to watch this. Fourth stage is like, fuck all these people. You know, like I went through all the emotional stages watching this documentary. Jan, not so much, especially at the end when you see how like, when she fucking confronts him.
That was so sick.
Dude,
like just fucking called it for the first time. Like, and he's never been talked to like that.
No,
he's never been called
without fucking emotion. You can hear her voice. I would have been a fucking mess. Mm-hmm. I would have been in the fetal position on the floor of that fucking court. Mm-hmm. But Jan looks right fucking at him. She's like, fuck you,
nah, Mr.
Burke. Like she uses his full name.
Yeah.
And she's just like, you know what would be good? If you feel you're sorry, confess fucking everything and serve your time. I was like, God damn.
Yeah.
That's fucking amazing.
I have to say, like, there's no like right way to be a survivor. Like, there's no right way to, you don't have to be strong. You don't have to be sad. Like, you don't have to be any of these things. But she is so strong. And like, I mean, it's obvious she's had the resources and done the work to heal from this, but like the way that she's able to, and again, she's the only interview I think that provides any reflection.
Right.
And the way that she's able to put you in her position, like you have to understand, like even since then, I've never loved anyone as much. And she's not defending that. She's just saying, look how fucked my brain was at this time.
Right.
Like, you need to know that this felt so real and that's why I did this. And why wouldn't it at that age? Like, when I'm being told, like, there's just this whole thing that I think still exists, but especially in that time and especially in like an organization like a church where adults are trustworthy by virtue of being adults.
Right.
And that's something like, I don't plan to have kids, but like if I did, that would be something straight up they would know from the get go. Like, no one's an authority based on anything off the bat. If an adult tells you something's a secret, tell me immediately.
Come to me. Yeah. Well, which brings me to the question of stranger danger, because as you were saying earlier, most of these kind of assaults come from someone in your family or someone that you know. Mm-hmm. So is it a misnomer to teach kids about stranger danger and not like friend end or something?
No, that's such a good point. That's the other thing that I think is just what makes it easier to be like, well, not someone I know, is that, yeah, stranger danger, I truly think is like the exception, not the rule.
Right.
I think that when you're taught like this is something done by, again, like people who appear out of the woods and disappear, then it's yet another thing for you to justify trusting someone you know against all odds.
Right.
It's like, but we knew him. How often do people say that?
All
like,
the fucking time.
Even abusers outed in the comedy community, but he doesn't seem like
it. Right. Not
it's
him.
Like, they all don't seem like it. They all have a best friend. It's right. You this time. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. That's so fucking good. You're so right, man. It's so true. And you're right. I mean, people would just be like, oh my God, I never would have thought. Like, he seems so sweet and so nice.
They're but
it's
all like, sweet and nice.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. a part of the manipulation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know who you should cozy up to? Those asshole comedians.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones.
But then Louis. But then Louis C.K.
But he was nice.
Was he?
Yeah. I mean, that's what everyone, he was a mentor. And you could go back to his hotel room because he would want to talk to you and tell you about your.
I guess I always heard the comparison of being like Cosby acted like, you know, all his shit was G-rated because he was hiding some like
right.
X-rated illegal stuff. Yeah. And Louis was supposed to be the opposite.
Oh.
Like, oh, he put it all on the table, so he's got nothing to hide.
Oh, I see.
It's more complicated than that.
Of course.
People are more complicated than
that. Of course. Yeah. And like this story, I mean, his story is so fucking crazy because it doesn't end. Like, mm-hmm. It's just today again. I've seen this multiple times, and I fucking forgot about the bikers, which you mentioned. Like, how do you forget about the bikers against BACA, bikers against child assault?
Great,
BACA, dude.
Give
fucking
yep.
my boys the BACA group. Like, that's the okay. So again, for people who have not seen the documentary, at the end we see Jan is in her healing process,
and she's kind of made a career about like awareness of child abuse,
which is like so fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I mean I have been thankfully as being a stand-up comic, like I have put stuff in my act that I have really needed to talk about, and it's such mm-hmm. an awesome thing that we as public speakers get to do. Not everyone has that ability
yeah.
or that chance or opportunity. So it's really cool to see some of the footage now 30 years later where she's on like a speaking tour and has this book that they're doing, Stolen Innocence, blah, whatever. With the kid's hand on like the glass, it's just like...
disgusting.
It's like, would ABC help you to put this together? But yeah, she's back on a speaking tour and we get to see her talk and stuff. And she obviously is working her way through, you know, some of these. And then we come to find out 30 fucking years later, this fucking asshole is still like stalking her. Mm-hmm. He's showing up to her speaking gigs.
Like, there's a reason she hired the biker gang.
Yeah.
Just stoop up outside her speaking engagement. And it's because Berchtold showed up and they got a fucking altercation.
Right.
The Family Fun Center hot dog wiener man got in a fucking fight with a biker gang. It's so sick. Honestly, that's the most uplifting moment in the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted them to beat the fuck out of him, though, but he ended up running over one of the biker guys. He's like, so an altercation did happen, and one of our biker members got ran over. It's like, what? What the fuck is going on?
An unusual confrontation this weekend in southern Utah. A woman speaks about being abused as a child when her accused kidnapper reportedly shows up and starts a clash with her biker security force. BACA members were outside the event when a man named Robert Berchtold is accused of driving up and making threats.
The perpetrator ran over one of our BACA members and then proceeded to drive off.
One of the bikers recognized him and says, that's Berchtold, let's get him. And they jumped up on the front and was holding on the windshield wiper. So he sped up and then stopped fast and the guy fell off, but he got hurt. So they called the cops. But Bob did have a gun.
There's these people out there that just like, I have the direct Zeta and Zethra.
He's the direct connect.
These are my direct connects, you know, and they're telling me to tell you, we got to hook this shit up or the planet's going to explode. I also, they dip their toe in a moment in this documentary where he had his eyesight on, eyes set on Karen or Sue.
The other sister.
One of the other sisters, not the youngest one because she was probably too young. But the other sister, like, if you don't go, you know, like, there was a moment in this doc where he's basically saying, like, it's either you or your younger sister is going to help me out.
Yeah.
You know, which is frightening, too, because he was like, okay, this one's getting a little old.
Yeah. Have the next one lined up.
Yeah. Have the next little one.
That's called grooming.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. And then, so the family seems to be back. Jen's comes back from this, she was gone for a long fucking time, like months.
Like a summer, like a whole fucking summer or something.
From like June to November, she was gone. And then that phone call. So the FBI is like, when the parents finally got the FBI involved, they decided to tap their phone. Well, thank fucking God, because we actually get to listen to real audio tapes of some of the phone calls of B calling and then her fucking calling.
Yeah. Yeah. She called one time, right? And so something that was so confusing to me about listening to Marianne, the mom's voice on those phone calls, is she sounded almost like she was having a response she thought she was supposed to have. You know, she wasn't crying. She didn't break down. She didn't freak out. She said she was freaking out. She said something like, I can't sleep tonight. And I honestly don't know how I'm supposed to interpret that. Like, I'm sure she was worried, but why does she sound so chill about it? Like, was it because she knew they were being recorded and she felt safer about the situation? It's all confusing to
me. Amen, dude. There's one point I'm like, why are you not asking where your daughter is? Why are you not demanding to know where your fucking daughter is?
And I don't get how when they chose. Oh, no, that sounds terrible.
Oh, no, that sounds horrible.
I guess I won't sleep tonight.
Yeah. How are you? Well, I'm doing pretty good. Haven't heard from Dolly in a while. Oh, that's too bad.
Like, what were we supposed to think about that, though? Like, why did the filmmaker put that in? How was that supposed to land with that? I can't even tell. That's how I feel about so many of the moments with the parents is like,
right,
they were accidentally thrown under the bus.
I don't know.
Like, yeah. The motivation for the whole documentary is definitely, I think it's the thing I'm saying, which is like awareness that this shit can happen.
Yeah.
Never think that you're exceptional.
Right.
Listen to your child. Right. Listen to your gut, whatever. Right. They had one neighbor. There was one neighbor.
One neighbor.
Who just went to a picnic one time.
Yeah.
I was like, something's off about this shit.
Fuck you.
I'm not talking to that dude. Just some old man in the 70s.
Okay, here's an interesting anecdote. Mm-hmm. That guy's daughter was Jan's best friend and was like, you cannot hang out with the fucking Brobergs anymore. That best friend, I watched, there's an interview on YouTube with her, and she said that when Jan came back for the second, after the second kidnapping, there was a PA announcement that was like, boys and girls, the today's lunch will be turkey and a side of green beans. The sports, the basketball team is on their way to the league championship. Oh, and Jan Broberg's here. Don't ask her any questions about what happened to her. Like, literally, that's what they said over the loudspeakers. It's like, she's back, don't talk to her.
Hell yeah.
About what happened.
And that's just like, yeah, I think that's just more evidence to like, this family didn't really understand how they would come across in this documentary. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have done it or let themselves be edited.
But
this
was
way.
Way after they wrote the book and been on the speaking tours and stuff. They've already been, they should have had this down as a science by now, you know.
I didn't read the book. I mean, maybe the book is completely different. Maybe it's, I mean, it's only her voice and her mother.
Well, apparently
right?
They don't go into a lot of the like sexual stuff in the book. Mm-hmm. They talk more about the manipulation, the kidnapping. They don't get into the sexual stuff.
Sure. Yeah. And so I think when you zoom out and then when you hear these weird parents talking about like how excited they felt about the molester man, like the response to the documentary, I'm assuming is different to the book for a reason.
Oh yeah. Well, people obviously have a very emotional response to this document, as mm-hmm. I did and as you did. Mm-hmm. Like this, it's the utter shock, especially in hindsight, like in 2019, you know, I think everyone's got their guard up. Like mm-hmm. to think that there was a time when you could just let this happen, not once, not twice, but three fucking times.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, yeah. And be a willing participant sexually with this fucking predator.
Both of them.
Fucking both
the
of them.
The whole family.
Yeah. It's incredible that the other two daughters kind of got away unscathed by this guy.
It's just timing.
It's mostly timing yeah. and age. Yeah. It's, oh my God, that's funny. and the, so Jan goes to the family center. Is gone for fucking months. She mm-hmm. calls at one point, Jan, oh my God, Dad's here. Can you wait a minute? She's like, I gotta go. Mm-hmm. Don't want to talk to Dad. And then he gets on the phone. And he's like, how are you? Good. What's going on? Not much. Will we see you soon? I don't know. Okay. Bye. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, what the fuck kind of parental, like
instinct
is that?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
What would, like, I don't, are they trying not to scare her? Like, if they get too demonstrative?
That might be it. I mean, each time there was some factor that they named. Like, the first time it was because Gail was like, oh, please don't. Please
oh, right.
don't call the police.
The wife
you know, his
of
wife.
B. Yeah.
Yeah. His wife was like, you'll embarrass me. And again, they're just so fucking weak that they're like, oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then the other time, yeah, maybe it was to protect. I'm using quotes right now. Like, protect Jan's feelings or experience. Like, maybe because they felt like they couldn't do anything, so they just didn't try.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know
There's either,
not a
dude.
Reason.
Dude, I don't. But. Listening to that conversation is so heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fucking heartbreaking. And then we find out that Jan had gotten out of a bedroom window, got into the Winnebago
mm-hmm.
with B. He drives her to fucking Pasadena, California, and enrolls her into an all-girls Catholic school.
That's fucking
under what pretense?
Oh, shit. What was it?
He's a CIA operative.
Oh, and she's like in witness protection or something?
Yes, because
that's
they escaped.
Right.
They escaped the Iran or
of
Lebanon.
Course, yeah.
They escaped Lebanon.
That's right.
Dude.
Oh, my God.
And the nuns? Sure. Mm-hmm. Seems good to me.
Didn't double check.
No.
Didn't call nobody.
No ID. Uh-huh. Didn't need to check an ID or nothing. She's under an assumed name, Janice Ebram or Tubler or something, I don't, you know.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Janice Ian is a famous jazz singer. Anyways, and she gets enrolled in fucking Pasadena, California, in all girls school. Mm-hmm. And then old boy drops one fucking mistake. He calls the school and leaves the phone book opened. And the FBI, this is another one of my favorite things the FBI did. It's like, we monitored his Winnebago for a couple of weeks. We didn't go in.
That was so weird.
But it's like, why don't, I don't know, how about maybe go see if someone's not being sexually molested or raped and, you know, they just monitored it.
You should go.
You should
go
probably
in.
Go in at this point. And they and go in they do a few weeks later.
Yeah.
Because they trail them to the phone booth. They see the phone number. They call the phone number. They find out it's the all-girls Catholic school in Pasadena and they finally put two and two together. Mm-hmm. They go into his Winnebago and what do they find? Those fucking portraits, like those like life-size portraits of her in the Winnebago. And he said it was like a mausoleum.
And that's probably where they found those photos where her like underwear showing and shit. They use those for all the like narration.
Yeah.
That's I'm sure the moment they this is
do you are you a Reddit person?
Like a little bit, like through other people.
So on Reddit, I love Reddit, man. I never was a big Reddit person. I didn't even really quite understand, but then I really got into Reddit. I like Reddit a lot because it's just random. I love random, almost useless information. But the other day I saw that this guy was showing how child predators use YouTube to alert other child predators of child pornography. They'll, you know how you can make timestamps of different videos. They'd watch these videos, and if this little girl like moves the right way and you can kind of see her underwear, they'd put a timestamp in the comment. Like
2:28 or
exactly.
Whatever.
Like put the timestamps in all these videos. Jeez. And then this guy was showing like if you watch one or two, all of a sudden in your right hand column for the suggested videos, it's all just like little girls. And then there's people, even some of these child predators are making money off of ads. And so just today, Disney, Apple, a bunch of people who had, because it became a viral video of this guy showing this, all took their ads off of YouTube.
Holy
until they can
shit.
Figure out what the fuck's going on. It's fucking deep. These, I mean, that's crazy.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's very encouraging. Like, here's just the major difference that I don't know when this happened. I don't know when we crossed this threshold of just like acknowledging publicly that child molestation is a thing. Or like rape. I have this argument too that like rape culture is a thing for sure, but definitely like pedophile culture. I actually think that we're like always presenting like young girls too old. Watch like a dance competition.
Oh,
and
yes.
Even like, of course, little like toddlers in tiaras, that's real obvious, but even just like, yeah, I don't even think it's rape culture infused with like and extremely young girls.
Yeah. It's the sexualization of like little girls in this country is just so fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
It happens a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's like, oh, but it's cutesy.
And that's
it's like,
so that's always been true. And so I wish I was there or whatever. I don't know if it happened in the 90s or 2002 or whenever that we suddenly like accept that pedophilia is a thing. It's a possibility. We're still all very like complicit in it or like that's immersed in it at the same time.
Well, and it's also the United States view on sex and sexuality. Just today, the owner of the Patriots football team was arrested in a sting with prostitutes. I think this is a multi-billionaire. And it's like, you know what? I mean, it's, I don't know. There's so much to that.
Like,
you know?
I don't even care. Like, I'm like, sure, duh.
Yeah.
I would have assumed. If you make like six figures, I assume you've like probably sexually abused someone. I'm
right.
Just kidding. But like, again, I think that the point of this documentary wasn't what happened. What happened is everyone's like, fuck this family. And like, woo, how crazy. And I think the point, like what Jan wanted and probably what her family wanted and why they participated was like, examine your life and examine this shit because it is everywhere.
Yeah.
It could be everywhere in your life. At least that's the only reason I can think why they would be so hands-on and involved.
Yeah. It's because it's an educational moment and they want people to know like this can happen to, and us, it can happen to you. And they're still dealing with it. I mean, this happened in 1974, you know, like they're still dealing with the repercussions and aftermath of something that happened 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's crazy.
Because like, they didn't deal with it up front. Like you can't kick this shit down the road.
No.
Like would it have blown up like that? None of this shit would have happened if the first time they were just like, nah, I think maybe nah.
Okay, we're good.
Yeah, it wouldn't become a phenomenon.
Yeah, thanks for the fruit basket, but peace. Yeah, I know, dude. Well, that is a really interesting point. Do you have, segue, do you have anything in your life that you've heard of that is really weird that you would think would make a great documentary?
Damn, I mean, maybe now's a good time to say I actually work in justice reform. So my relationship to true crime is like really mixed. I mean, just I basically do workforce development for incarcerated people. And just as a note, like my program doesn't accept people who do cybercrime or any sex crimes. But
why not cybercrimes?
We teach coding.
Oh.
So, you know.
Yes.
Literally, people already are like, so you're making hackers for the drug cartel? Yeah. So we met that one in the book.
Oh, gotcha.
But anyway, I have this thing about prison media. So I'm not a systems impacted person in any way. So my entire life, the only way I've related to prison is through like prison media, which is, I mean, it's not like super revolutionary to say, like, it's a really unfair exaggeration and a dehumanizing translation of probably the most human experience. Like the stories, I could make thousands of documentaries
out of
the stories, like not only the personal like biographies of so many of the people I've worked with, but also just like what it is like to be in prison.
Yeah.
And the positives of like what you're kind of the opposite of what this documentary is about.
Right, right.
It's kind of like when you are forced to be so strong and like denial can help you actually survive and get things done. Like what does that look like?
Mm, interesting.
And so, yeah, I mean, there's probably some good prison docs that I should see, but, I feel like there's a lot in prison media that I would change in a documentary.
Have you
would be a good way to do that.
Heard the podcast that comes out of San Quentin?
Oh, Ear Hustle. Yeah, I was in their offices on Wednesday.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
they're like close with our program, kind of. I knew Nigel before she even started doing that, because she was teaching photography there before that. But I mean, that's a perfect example. If you want to consider a podcast a documentary, like,
sure,
it's a perfect example of. I mean, you've listened to it?
I have, yeah.
What are some of the things that were like the most shocking to you or the most like perspective changing for you?
I think the first episode, or maybe it was the second episode, where they're talking about the day-to-day life of people in prison,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what they do and what they can't do and just the monotony of it all.
Yeah.
Like that to me. Like generally when you see a prison movie, it's like loud and crazy.
Make it very scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it just seems like it was just more boring, you know.
It's an insane combination of either or. And yeah, I just think it's such a complex experience. And it's also this thing that's like right under our nose. Like San Quentin is like 17 miles from here right now.
Right.
And it's, I mean, just what appealed to me at all about like working with those folks is that they're people who are already so isolated from society enough to do something to harm society, right? Like when you don't feel like people are invested in you, you're not invested in other people. You feel like there are no consequences because no one's ever been beholden to a consequence on your behalf. So then to pick them up and physically isolate them, like geographically to another place, you know, and kind of treat them like they are disposable and that when you put them away, they are away.
Right.
When they're not, they're right there.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I think there's a lot to explore. And I'm not, so I, I have a lot of feelings about it too, is like, there's a lot of packaging around social justice and not enough like social justice work just happening, like direct impact stuff. But it is true that sometimes through media and storytelling, that is the best way to make people open to an actual reform in a system that right now they think they understand that they truly don't. So I guess that's what I'm going to do now. I guess I'm going to go make documentaries.
That'd be awesome.
Incarcerated people.
Dude, that would be awesome. We didn't really get into your background so much. You're a comedian here in the Bay Area. You did our show, The Charm Offensive at the Punchline.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see that as a way of messaging? Do you see that as just a fun thing? Do you see that as like something you need to do because you always wanted to be a comedian?
Yeah. So just the first thing I'll say is actually the way that I got interested in San Quentin is that I heard there were a lot of rehabilitative programs there. And I don't know why, but for some reason I had just started comedy. So it's like a little bit like arrogant of me. But in my mind, I was like, okay, I've heard all these like waitress jokes. I've heard these like office humor, even like mechanic jokes I started to like get really familiar with. And I was like, what's a perspective I haven't heard in stand up? And literally, I probably just said it off the cuff one day. It was just like inmate humor. Like, what is that culture like? What are things like inside jokes that I wouldn't get? Because I was working in social services at that time, I found my way into like getting a tour of the prison. And in my mind was just kind of there to research. It was just like, I wonder if they'd even be interested. Like, they have painting, they have theater, maybe they'd want to do stand up. And there's like a panel of dudes who run the tour. And literally the first guy who spoke, he just got released actually. And he's on a couple episodes of Ear Hustle. His name's Anand Khan. But he did his little spiel and seriously, it was like such like a tight five.
Yeah.
Like,
he
was so funny. And I was like, I was so right. Like, I knew it.
And oh my God.
Did not think I do. So I went straight up to him. I was like, hey, so, I'm a comedian and would you want to learn stand up? And he was just like, floored, whatever. We're still kind of in contact.
That's so
and
we cool. talk
about, it. He's very busy. He's very in demand. But yeah, another thing that I've wanted to do is, I mean, I already kind of like outed myself, but I want to write a show that is a different kind of prison media that's ever happened before. And with formerly incarcerated people from my program, I already have like some meetings about it with some of them. They're busy and it's definitely, I'm too early in my career to.
When you say show, do you mean a TV show?
I'm thinking, yeah, like, you know,
it'd be awesome.
It's very inspired by Dear White People in terms of the tone.
Right.
They're able to like have really realistic like police brutality scenes and then go back to like girls just joking around with each other. And that is kind of what it feels like being there. Like, it's life or death shit. And then also everyone's really funny.
Right.
And just really funny moments happen with people who are returning to society, kind of the way comedians have this outside perspective. They completely do too. If they've been in for like 10, 20 years, like the first time some dude tried, you'll see this in the show, but the first time, someone who's released recently, he tried kombucha. He's like, this tastes like straight up day one Pruno. Like, that's what y'all are paying $6 for at Whole Foods. It's toilet wine.
Yeah.
This is the same thing.
Yeah. That's
just
awesome.
As an example. Right. But yeah, okay, so what's comedy in my life? I did always know I'd do it.
Yeah.
Because I was like 5. And then I didn't do it till I was like 22. And I think comedy writing is probably going to be, I mean, that's been the dream and the plan for 10 years. And it's hard because now I have this really legit day job. So I think the TV show is probably going to be called Welcome Home. It's so way too early to plug this thing. But that will probably be the combination of all the things that I care about.
That sounds awesome.
And like, honestly, they're so funny.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to do a lot. I sort of have like somewhat industry knowledge, writing experience, but in terms of like the material and the understanding of messaging, like that's right. All of them. They have it.
That's awesome.
So that's like a passion project right now.
Where can people follow you?
Me? I guess the best venue would be my Instagram, which I don't say out loud often, but it is at Pookie Doodoo Sticks. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Can you spell that?
Yeah. It's with an IE. So it's POOKIE DOODOOSTICKS.
Nice.
It's an inside joke.
Got it.
From 4 years ago. I thought I would change it.
Don't change that. Don't change that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, follow Haley on Instagram at Pookie Doodoo Dog Sticks. Is that, did I get even get it close? Something Poogie, is it Poogie or Pookie?
That's not the part you got wrong.
Oh, shit.
It was the dog dicks.
Oh.
Pookie Doodoo Sticks.
That's
.net.
Awesome. And definitely, if you have not seen this documentary, definitely watch Abducted in Plain Sight. It's on Netflix. We didn't even get to some of the other crazy shit that happened in this doc.
My bad.
No, please. This was awesome.
Thank
Haley,
you.
This is, I think, the first time we've actually ever talked. So this went very well.
This is how comedians do it.
It is.
It has to be some content in some form of another.
Yeah, we did. Other than that, we just stand around like statues.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you, for real.
Yep, my pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
If you want us to cover a doc, have suggestions for guests, or you just want to reach out, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.